Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM on this Monday night. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock. Tonight we have Eamon Dunphy coming up on all the weekend's Premier League action. Breaking news from Spain as well. We have Joe Kernan after Ireland's victory against Australia at Croke Park. Donal Lenihan on the defeats for Leinster and Ulster in the Rugby Champions Cup. And Conor Mortimer and Alan Collier both with me in studio. You're very welcome, lads.
Evening,
Hugh. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm not too bad. 51552 if you've anything to say between now and 8 o'clock, by the way, and at Game On 2FM on Twitter. What about that cue card, Alan Colley?
We should pose that question.
He
to
found
you,
his
me.
Fourth leg, didn't he?
Cue card, Hugh.
He'll still beat Swede FA, so he will.
You think
when
so?
It comes to Cheltenham, he's
you're
a flat horse specialist.
You're and still he beat not backing nobody. Down.
Sure, Sylvie Nacho-Conti can't win at Cheltenham. I mean, Dinas can't win anywhere. Like, what are we supposed to say? I was getting abused on Twitter because, you know nothing about horse racing. I tell you what, if that horse wins at Cheltenham, I will eat my hat.
Really?
No
you're not,
chance.
You're not backing down.
No chance. 100%. I don't care what Tizard says. He's not a Gold Cup horse.
I'm looking forward to the texter. I'm sure he'll be texting back in tonight, giving a stick.
I'm telling you, I'm in the mood for a row tonight.
In fairness to Cue Card, he was as good as I've seen him ever.
Listen, he did what he had to do on
know,
a flat track against an
good.
Average field. Come back to me when you've beaten Don Poley or Coney Gray or Jack Adam or any of the other top grade one horses over 3 miles at Cheltenham up that hill. Then
the trainer is saying he has him in the best nick possible that he's been in the last
that's
two or three.
Fair
years.
Enough.
So
yeah.
Let's see on the big day if he'll beat them.
Yeah.
Give him his chance.
Yeah, okay.
And give him his dues for what he's done so far.
Speaking of Jews, what do you think of this? Here's the thing now. I was talking to Michael Ryan, who works in TV3 and a former colleague of mine in 98. We were on Twitter last night, and he put up this thing. He was embarrassed by what happened over in Fenway Park with the hurlers doubling against Galway and the schmozzle during the game there. He just said, you know, as an exhibition of trying to grow the sport in foreign countries and in the United States of America, that it was shameful what happened. I totally disagree. I think it was a bit of a few slaps here and there.
I wouldn't say I was that serious, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I was that serious, to be honest.
No.
No, it wasn't actually a full-fledged...
Sure, the Americans love that stuff. They eat it up all day long.
They're all saying it on Twitter themselves.
Yeah, you know, the more violent, the better, as far as they're concerned. Yeah.
Okay, but we're not American.
Yeah, so we're Irish. Actually born there, so...
So if they love it, that has absolutely no reference whatsoever to us.
But why is it a problem, though?
Because I thought it was actually embarrassing.
Why are you embarrassed,
though? Grown men running around... The goalkeeper ran at one stage, ran the length of the pitch to get up and get involved and just throw himself.
That's called supporting your teammates out.
It's
I got your back.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I wouldn't want to be on a pitch with you if someone came at me.
No, well,
you'd be standing there going, don't touch them.
We wouldn't behave like that. We wouldn't behave like that.
The opposite way, will you stop? Soccer players don't know.
Honestly, I thought it was embarrassing. You're over there trying to exhibit the skills.
It's a sport. It's a bloody contact sport.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, but you don't need to be breaking out into a full
But these things happen, though.
It's sport, yeah.
It's sport.
We're seeing in Derry in the weekend as well, the fracking in Derry in the club games. You just seen them online today. No, that was proper scrapping.
Yeah, but at least there was real something scrapping. At stake on the line in that match. Then I've no issue with it whatsoever. But these lads are going over there to exhibit the skills and put on a show for the people.
But how are you supposed to grow a sport if nobody gives a toss about anything and they're all holding back going, oh, you're lovely, you're lovely.
Yeah, no
Ash, we'll just tap it around here. That's not what sells sport. Sport is about competition and about lads getting stuck in. And regardless if it's an exhibition game or not, so what, it spills over. Nobody got seriously hurt. And I'm not advocating for 1 second that lads go out and bait the living Jesus out of each other. That's not what I'm saying. This was passions flaring, lads got a bit heated, things happen, it's a contact game. I think it would be a lot worse if they were all just tippy-tapping about, Ash, you're great lads, let's go and have a few pints. This shows commitment.
No, but I don't think they were tippy-tapping about, obviously they were caring, but there's no need to be, honestly Hugh, grown men running around the pitch, like, and as you said, nothing even happened, throwing handbags at each other.
Yeah, but
it's
sure,
nonsense.
Look,
like, it's
there's just no exhibition, it was an exhibition game, but when you have, you know, it was Dublin and Galway, playing against each other or any two teams in an exhibition. It's like a friendly in soccer.
There's no such
there is
thing
no,
as a friendly.
It's a
when you put your boots
game,
on. Think of us it. On Wednesday mornings going out and playing football, we tear lumps out of each other and then everything's fine after.
Yeah, but can I say something about that, right? Because that what that is lads getting stuck into each other, a challenge, a tackle. Does a brawl ever break out where there's 14 men running into each other, dragging out of each other, goalkeepers running from one end of the pitch to the next, jumping
in? That wasn't
in.
A brawl. I tell you what, there wasn't a single punch thrown.
I don't know what footage you were looking at.
That's all it was.
You were looking at a different match.
It wasn't. Tell me one lad that one lad that had to leave the pitch. One lad that actually went down hurt. The worst thing that happened was somebody pulling her. The worst thing that happened was a face guard getting pulled, which I thought, you know, you just don't put your hands in there because they're danger may come in the eyes. That was the worst thing that happened. Everything else was just schmuzzling.
Which is absolutely laughable. Kids in the playground wouldn't do that. Schmozzling.
Of course they would.
It's ridiculous.
Ah, we just stop.
Grow men.
I tell you, I'm going to teach Harry how, have to teach Harry how to box. If you're the influence that is
my
life.
We'll see. Put it to the listeners and we'll see right. Who thought it was an embarrassment and
right.
Who didn't.
Fenway Park. Was it an embarrassment? Yes or no? Put out the old poll there on Twitter there, JJ. Was it embarrassing? Were you embarrassed as an Irish man, as a GAA person that had to witness those scenes? Or do you think this is part of sport? What is the big problem? We're getting too soft, people.
I've no problem with people getting stuck in, but carrying on like that is ridiculous.
51552, do let us know. How's the form with you, Conor? I haven't had it, seen you in
good.
A while.
All good, not a bother. Happy
it was an interesting weekend, all things considered. Alan, I have to ask you your views, because growing speculation now that League of Ireland is going to lose one of its best players to Brighton, who are, in fairness, going very well. And we said this was probably on the cards, and I don't think there's a single person who would begrudge Richie Towell moved like that.
No, absolutely nobody. And hopefully it happens, Hugh, because there's been a lot of talk that he is going to leave towards the end of the season after the brilliant season that he's had, scoring all the goals. So, of course, there's interest. Towards the end of the season, we were hearing a couple of the clubs that were being bandied about, and it was kind of League One, League Two. We were hoping that maybe a Championship club might come in for him, and obviously the word today is that Brighton are seriously interested, and it looks like a move could be on the cards. And if that's the case, I would absolutely love to see him go to Brighton.
Your biggest fear was that he just settled to a move for England for the sake of going to England, and that, you know, that potentially, you know, it would be an average club and then we'd never hear from him again.
Yeah, because no disrespect, but there was big talk Bristol Rovers were offering him a trial. It was a total insult to the lad, Hugh. He's playing every week over here. Now, people might look down their noses on the league over here, but he was playing in the Champions League as well. So he's done everything he can possible for people who are actually interested in taking him across the water. He doesn't need to go and prove himself in a trial. So now that obviously there's seems to be concrete interest from Brighton, I think it'll be an absolutely brilliant move for him. And don't be surprised now with the Euros on the cards as well. If he was to go over there and do very well, Hugh, you just never know.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
It'd be unbelievable.
Sure, why not though?
Exactly. And that's the attitude to have, because Chris Forrester is another one who went to Peterborough a few weeks ago, and there was big talk about Chris. Could he do it across the water? I fully believed he could, because of the talent and the ability he has. He's doing brilliant since he's gone over.
Okay, if you missed anything from the weekend, there was Gaelic games, there was golf, there was rugby, there was soccer as well. We got you covered. A minute and a half of the finest here. We've got Eamon Dunphy standing by. Hang on for that.
You know, the next 10, 15 years is my time, and I really can't be doing silly things like playing football in the middle of the season to jeopardize, you know, even if it's just 6 months of my career, it's a big chunk where I could win a major or two, and I won't be making those mistakes again.
Dermot Connell, he lit up the club final here a couple of years ago. The ball sent in across it again. The goalkeeper's out to flap at it there. A chance for Ireland is kicked into the net. It is Aidan O'Shea who's finished it to the back of the net. The shot fired in there by Conor McManus, the man from Clontibret, hanging in the air, and over it goes from McManus. Ireland are flying here in the early stages, 12 points to 3 now.
It was a very bad afternoon for us. We had 70% possession, we scored an own goal, we missed a penalty. We gave a goal away on set piece. That's perfect to make of your afternoon a nightmare.
You know, if it's to me or whoever's to be the next manager, that we can get a move on with it. So I've spoken with the chairman maybe about 10 days to a fortnight ago. I think we might be in a position to move things along.
It's brilliant. I'm delighted. I've only had a handful of rides over fences, so I'm very grateful to Gordon and Mr. McManus for giving me the opportunity today. It was nice to have three winners on the day. They were all from my boss, Gordon, so that was brilliant.
Yeah, that was a little summation of everything that happened over the weekend. I'm delighted to say that Eamon Dunphy is on the line, as he is every Monday night here on Game On. Hi, Eamon.
Hi, Hugh.
Just your own view on this. We were talking about, I don't know if you saw what happened in Fenway Park over the weekend. You know, there was a bit of a schmozzle, Eamon. And I'm saying
a little bit of it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying, look, there's no harm in this. Lads, it's a sport. Passions have turned over. And actually, you know, it's good for the game because it shows lads are interested. Alan says, no, this is a bit of an embarrassment and he wants nothing to do with it. What's your own view on that kind of stuff?
I think I'd be more in... on Alan's side of the argument, really. I mean, discipline and self-discipline is part of, you know, sport, as part of life, and indiscipline and, you know, that kind of stuff it's not really what sport is about. I mean, if you want to do that kind of stuff, go cage fighting, you know.
Yeah.
That's my I don't have, I never had sympathy for people who didn't have the discipline to play a game and take what you get, take what comes, without losing the head.
But the nature of sport, I suppose, you know, and my argument is that they're human beings out there, tempers are high, they want to win, regardless, as Conor said, there's no such thing as a friendly anymore, so you go out, you put on boots, you want to go out there and win, and sometimes these things happen. And if it happens, and you stand up for yourself and your teammates, and it does boil over, then so be it, that's part of
Well, there's a referee there who's supposed to take care and protect the, you know, the people who are innocent and punish the people who are guilty. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for it. I mean, I really don't. I think rule breakers in sport are at odds with the spirit of sport. Sport is the one place in the whole of life where things are equal and, you know, it's a level playing pitch for everybody. It depends on how good you are and how honest you are, how disciplined you are, and if you bring the kind of the real world into sport, in other words, get away with whatever you can, then I don't think that's good for sport, and I'm against it.
To counter your argument, Hugh, I think is like what you're saying about sport and fellas being competitive and getting stuck in. That's fair enough in terms of tackles and being strong and physical in one sense. But you don't want full-scale brawls to break out and fellas, like the Gaelic are always saying how, about like obviously setting the right example and being, they really are a lot more professional now in terms of the way they train the Gaelic players as well. So you have to conduct yourself very professionally as well. And when you go across the water like they were trying to do in an exhibition match and obviously showcase their skills and their talents, they don't need to be behaving like thugs on the pitch.
Yeah, okay. Well, here's just a flavour of a few of the texts that have come in so far. I'm with you. Sport, it happens. Once you leave it on the pitch, it's fine by me. Hi, lads. If Galway had shown that intensity in the second half of the All-Ireland, they would have won, says Tom. Yes, it's a bad advertisement from the sport. Is another. No, proud. Another one. Not one bit embarrassing, another text. I don't care what anyone says, that fight was staged. The Galway keeper ran the length of the field and not one punch thrown. I think the organisers set it up to get people to talk about it on social media so more people would tune in. Alan is a clown. Total disgrace, is Gerard and Dunboyne. Yes, it's disgusting. The brawl in the US is not an embarrassment. Hi, Hugh. Was that dust-up plan to keep to happen to keep the Yanks interested? Regards, says Tom. And handbag stuff. Did Alan ever play a real man's game? Says Martin Fahey. Plenty more, which we'll get to a little bit later on.
Does Martin think fellas running around with handbags like that are real men, Hugh? They're not real men.
It's a man's game.
Idiots.
Yeah. It's a man's game.
Eamon, all right, let's take a break from this because I wanted to ask you about the situation that's playing itself out in Real Madrid at the moment. Rafael Benitez has been given the vote of confidence by the president today and the board, despite that, well, it was just a hammering, really, at the hands of Barcelona on Saturday. What did you make of Madrid's performance, Eamon?
They were terrible. And I saw the previous week against Seville, where they lost 3-2, but effectively 3-1. They scored a consolation goal in the last minute, and they were terrible in that match as well. But the difference was they had a stronger team against Barcelona at the weekend. I think Benitez's style of football and style of management won't wash with, you know, Ronaldo and superstar players. I think he's a very negative coach, always did. And I think he's toast. Really, I mean, Perez is stuck with him now, but they had a great coach, Ancelotti, won the Champions League, won the Liga, you know. The president runs Real Madrid, Perez, and I think the most remarkable thing about the game on Saturday, which I saw, was how well Barcelona played without Lionel Messi, who only came on very late.
They were brilliant.
They were absolutely amazing, and this is a new team, Luis Enrique's team, and they were stunning. I mean, the first goal was absolutely stunning. So I think Real Madrid, you know, is a soap. It always has been. The president runs the club. He's decided, I think his big thing, big mistake, he decided Gareth Bale was the new Ronaldo, and he's not. And he paid 100 million euros for him, and I don't think Gareth Bale is worth that. He's a good player, but he's not in that league. And, you know, it's just a question of time before Benitez is out the door. He fell out with Ramos, who publicly contradicted him last week about his tactics. He's fallen out with Ronaldo, who I predicted on this programme when you were away, Hugh,
yes,
on your travels.
Alan just reminded me of it actually just before we came in, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be in PSG next year with the special one.
Okay.
And it's over for Ronaldo Madrid, and that's a serious blow to Madrid. Although they have some good players, Modric is a good player. I think Ramos is an amazing player now, wild but very, very much a leader of the club. So they're in turmoil, and they're 6 points behind in the league, which they're never going to get back. They've got to go to the new camp apart from anything else. So that's a kind of train wreck.
Alan, the point was made today, Ken Early in the Irish Times said, you know, Real Madrid call themselves the Galacticos because they like to model themselves as having the best players in the world. The best players in the world, all three of them, Neymar, Suarez and Lionel Messi, are playing with Barcelona.
Yeah, and that's kind of sums it up. And I'd like to focus more on actually how good Barcelona were on Saturday night, Hugh, because this is a team that's just, without Lionel Messi as well, they were absolutely as good as I've seen them. And we've seen these at the height of their powers under Pep's teams, and everyone was questioning, will they ever kind of reach them levels and reach them heights? I think they're close to reaching them heights again with this team. Suarez, is obviously we've seen him in the Premiership, how good he is. Took him probably a few weeks to integrate into it. He obviously had the ban, but himself and Neymar now are absolutely unbelievable. And for Messi to come back in, to have a fella Rakitic in midfield, Busquets, young fella played wide right the other night, Sergio Roberto, they're a phenomenal team, they really are. And for them to go to the Bernabeu and basically dismantle Real Madrid in the fashion that they did, I tell you, I'd worry. Like, we watch the Premiership from week to week, and I watch United on Saturday, I watch Liverpool, I watch Man City, I watch Chelsea, Arsenal. They're a million miles away from Barcelona.
Eamon, on that point, I mean, we're being peddled this stuff, you know, the Premier League as one of the best leagues in the world, and you go down and watch Barcelona play this absolutely mind-blowing football, beautiful to watch, just clinical in everything they do. Yeah. And then you watch Man City, the defending champion, or Chelsea I should say, yeah, struggle to beat Norwich. Man City have won it the year before, getting absolutely outclassed, and Man United, who seem happy now to play defensive football. And you just wonder, worlds apart, the two leagues.
Yeah, but I think, to be fair, in fairness to the Premier League, Barcelona were world ahead of every league. I mean, they're ahead of Serie A and the French league. This PSG is a one-horse race. So, I mean, what Barcelona have, you know, the talent they have, and, you know, I think Alan's right, the Sergio Roberto, he set up the first goal for Suarez. Man, it was something else. We've never heard of this guy. But City, Manchester City, was shocking. You know, I mean, really shocking. I mean, the other big story, I thought Barcelona were the big story of the weekend, but Liverpool were too.
Yeah.
You know, with none of their...
it's amazing the self-belief they have, Eamon, in the space of, what, a month?
Yeah, I mean, this guy's been there 6 weeks, and I think he's the biggest story of the season in the Premier League. And imagine if Real Madrid had hired him, didn't. Imagine if Man U had hired him. This guy's the real deal. I mean, he did it without Sturridge, without Benteke, without Sacco, actually, at the back. But their attitude, the confidence he's imbued in them, in a very short space of time, their hunger for it, the quality of the play. I mean, the third goal was a dream-like stuff. Against, you know, a collection of mercenaries. I mean, I've never been a fan of the Manchester City project, but they should dismantle it now and start again. Why didn't they go for Klopp? And football's a mad game. I mean, if you gave Klopp the kind of resources that Manchester City have spent and wasted, largely, then you'd have the best team in Europe.
Conor, you're a Liverpool fan. You got to be happy about what you're seeing under Jurgen Klopp here.
Yeah, I mean, look, even for the players that I'm sure he'd like to probably, you know, have, I suppose, a few more stronger players in the squad that he was left from Brendan Rodgers. You know, as you've seen the weekend there, now I said it before the City game on Saturday, like City, when company doesn't play for City, that Malbueno, the guy at the back there, is a terrible player. Like, he's rubbish, like, to be honest.
40 million euros worth of rubbish.
He's not good. And I said it before the game, if we get at him early, we can get a goal or two early in the game. Now, since he's come in, I was at Palace 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it was, how would you say, it was probably Rodgers-esque, really. Same type of football. They had energy and they pressed hard, but finishing wise, they couldn't kick a door on Halloween night in that Palace game. Now, I don't think that Klopp is a big fan of Benteke, to be honest. I don't know if he suits the way he wants us to play with this pressing and stuff like that. You know, but happy so far. We're doing okay. You know, I think if he can get one or two more in January, I mean, Henderson is back next week, and Sturridge, I mean, they're two players that be straight in the team as well. So it's positive.
Eamon, I was just looking through Odds Checker there, one of my regular websites here at work, and you can get 11-1 about Leicester City to finish in the top four. Any chance?
No chance.
I thought you might say
that. Don't go there. I tell you what, whatever price you get Liverpool finishing the top four, you, and I'm on fire, by the way. I backed Rory at the start.
Did you?
Yeah, big time.
Gary Murphy was on him. Gary Murphy backed him as well.
I had to take a stiff drink. when he holds the 40-foot putt to get it for a bogey, I took another stiff drink. by the time he got the trophy,
you were in great form.
It was elephants. Alan will explain that to you, but yeah. I've had a great weekend. I would say I don't think Leicester can stay there. Although it's a very, very bad season. I mean, I watched Manchester United and Watford, and I think anyone who watched the 90 minutes of that match should, you know, get some leniency from God when the day comes. It was absolutely horrendous. I mean, Watford are a park team, yeah, and United scrambled over the line. To be fair to them, had a lot of players missing, but if they can be second and Leicester first, it tells you what a bad league it is.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and I actually thought it was Liverpool, we mentioned, Alan, but what about Spurs and Harry Kane? Yeah. I saw you tweeting about this last night. They were brilliant.
I'm a huge fan of Kane, Hugh, and I even go back to Christmas when Eamon was on with us, and remember to beat Chelsea 4-1. Kane was unbelievable. He destroyed them. But I can't believe United didn't go for Kane in the summer. I think Kane is top notch, he really is. He would have been ideal for United as well. They were crying out for a player like him. And yeah, Pochettino's done a great job, and largely as well, which is good to see, I suppose, from the English point of view, Hugh. A lot of young English players, the young lad Dele Alli and Dyer that plays in midfield as well, obviously Kane, there's another young lad Mason, so there's a lot of young lads that have come through there. And Pochettino, and he's kind of gone about his business really under the radar a little
bit.
And
very, I like that
professionally,
about him.
Very well, yeah. Doesn't kind of cause too much of a stir, just goes about his business in the right way. And Spurs, and the way the league is at the moment, and that's why as well, even looking at Klopp, the influence he's had, and Liverpool, with the mess going on at Chelsea, obviously Arsenal are usual inconsistent selves, City being a mess on Saturday, it's wide open for the likes of a Liverpool or Spurs now to actually break into that top four.
You have to feel, Eamon, that Arsenal missed a trick. I mean, losing to West Brom after going a goal up as well. I mean, Wenger must be pulling his hair.
Defence for the, you know, for the winner, one of the West Brom goals. And they have, Arsenal, to be fair to them, got a lot of players injured, a lot of top players injured. But I don't think they have the right stuff, you know. Probably City will, when they get David Silva back, they may just be good enough to win the league, but they're a desperate crowd. I mean, you wouldn't want them on your conscience if you spent that money. I mean, the question about City is, who's spending the money?
Mm.
Who's picking the team?
Yeah.
Who decided to play Yaya Toure in midfield with only one other player, whose name was Fernando? I mean, that's like, you know, that's like no midfield.
Mm.
And they were absolutely murdered. So I used to think Pellegrini, you know, had something, but I think he should be out the door because, you know, he's doing things that are inexplicable. And he's ball players. Like, the real big news for me are how Sterling irate, but this De Bruyne, who they raved about, paid 60 million for him. He's useless.
Really?
He's no good at, yeah, he was no good at United, against United. No good again when they needed him at the weekend. But when he played little teams, he's, you know, he looks like a superstar. But what you want is players who play in the big games, and this is a big game. So whatever's going on at Manchester City, the money's coming from Abu Dhabi, but they need to have a steward's inquiry.
Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, well, it's true.
Yeah,
I mean,
your man Jesus Navas got an awful lot of stick after them. There were people saying, "Why is this guy getting in the team?"
The thing for City with me, Hugh, that kind of always, and it rears its ugly head every now and again when they have an injury. David Silva is probably the best player in the Premier League, and Aguero is the best striker. And any time they don't have them, for all the money that they've spent millions on this, like in the last three or four years, and they're still so reliant on one player, and it speaks volumes for a team who's trying to obviously get themselves up to that kind of the higher echelons. And I'm not just judging these teams on kind of the English level. I'm judging these teams, the money they're spending, and United included, they should be up with the likes of Barcelona and Bayern Munich. They're a million miles, Hugh. Like, they're not even close. They're a million miles away from the likes of Barcelona and Bayern Munich.
Connor?
No, just on De Bruyne there, I think more or less City carry bought De Bruyne for Champions League football. Now, he has scored some important goals in the Champions League. They've got to the knockout stages now for the first time in what?
They'll be annihilated in the Champions League, Connor.
That's why you
have no chance.
What's they going to do in the Champions League that they couldn't do against Liverpool?
Yeah, they have no chance.
Yeah.
And that's what that's what's staggering for me, Hugh, about them, the money they've spent. And David Silva's a phenomenal player, but they shouldn't be relying on one player or Aguero the same when he's injured to struggle.
Well, Eamon, I'm going to stick 10 euros in Leicester to finish in the top 4 11-1.
Okay, Hugh. I know you're a bookie, by the way. He's driving a BMW, top of the range, he says. Every time I see him, he says, how's you?
a ringing endorsement. Listen, I'll have a few tips for you by December the 27th. I promise you, in the Leopardstown Pavilion.
Okay, let's hope they let me in this year.
Okay, listen, mind yourself. Thanks, Eamon.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers. Thanks, Eamon. Eamon Dunphy there. Great stuff as always. Okay, more texts on whether or not it was an embarrassment, the Fenway Park hurling schmozzle. Galway and Dublin fight looked scripted, if you ask me, says Kevin. Americans eat all that up. If it wasn't scripted, it shows passion. That is all. Where was Dublin's fight in August and Galway's fight in September, says Dave and Kilkenny. Yeah, a few people making that point. Disgraceful behaviour by both sides. Doesn't help promote the game. Instead, it revealed the dark side of GA games. What a load of rubbish is that? The dark side of GA. I just wonder. And I can't be seen to be promoting violence here, which I'm not. But
you
like,
are.
You know, there's have you ever said, played a contact said, sport Hugh. Where tempers boil yeah, but, over? For yeah, God's
but
sake.
But that's in an incident where you might react to a tackle. You know, a brawl doesn't need to break out.
It wasn't a brawl.
It happens in all
slapsy wapsies.
People will send texts and talk for the sake of talking. It's not, you know, it's not really saying anything about it. You know what I mean?
The match in America was great crack, said someone. Well said, Alan. The big heads from Croke Park ooing and aahing about the Mickey Mouse game on Saturday night. A trip for the boys. Dublin and Galway acting the tramp in America and not a word from the suits. If that was two unfashionable teams, they would be destroyed. Well done, the GAAs from Sill and Wicklow. Liam and Cork says, it's an insult to coaches who are trying to teach kids fair play and respect. I just don't accept that point. I think all coaches do try and teach kids fair play and respect, but you also try and teach them how to be winners. And if things get to a head and you're talking about supporting your teammates here and actually showing a bit of passion in what it is that you're doing, and sometimes that means you lose the cool. It just happens. We're not robots. Yeah, human beings.
It's not even something to talk about.
I think you're missing the point. If that was the All-Ireland semi-final and something like that, you're talking about passion and sometimes you lose the head because of what's at stake. They're playing in a Mickey Mouse game like that.
But it's not. It's not. It's a game where they both want to win.
It's an 11-a-side game that they've never played in their life.
But what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? Go and say, actually, I don't care who wins, so we won't actually go full battle. And again, this idea of promoting the game. How are you promoting a game if you're 50-50 going into tackles, if you're not prepared to give it everything? That's not promoting anything.
No, but there's a responsibility on them to behave properly. That someone needs to pull them together. Like, instead of them all jumping in, why wasn't there fellas trying to separate them?
But there was. And why are you not talking? You're talking about perfect world ideology here, utopia, where everybody loves everybody and nobody loses the cool. That doesn't happen. It's not real life.
I've played a million. Of course
you
have. Gaelic.
Of course you have.
I've played every sport.
And you've played every. Yeah, I understand that. That's why I'm surprised that you don't.
No, I get the whole passion.
Too long out of the game.
But what I'm saying
too long
is,
out of the game, son.
That's not passion. That's ridiculous. You're saying them fellas are brave. Come on, I'll push and shove you and run around the pitch. Idiots. That's all that is.
Peter in Kildare says, not on Twitter, but think Alan Cully's attitude re Boston is OTT. Not at all embarrassing. I actually thought it was planned. That's what happens in competitive games. So they were displaying it as a competitive game. Added excitement. Had friends from Boston at it and they loved it, says Dear to the Dub. Not an embarrassment. It's all part of the game. No one got hurt. For any of you that played the game, you would know hurling is a very intense game. Plus, the Americans loved it. Will you tell that soccer field to shut his gob? Our hurlers and footballers are real men. No
See,
quarter
this,
given.
This
Sometimes
nonsense,
it spills over.
At a absolute nonsense. Real,
it's physical. It's a physical game.
Men.
Soccer, it's not. It's you're not going to hit banging, bumping, banging soccer. Football is totally different. Hurling.
What, so other, they're bigger men
if
to play.
If I hit you across the head with a hurl,
they're bigger
what are you
men to play.
Stand
Gaelic.
There and look at me. You want to stand there and look at
so
me.
So Gaelic players are bigger than soccer players.
I had this argument that it doesn't happen in rugby. It does happen in rugby. I tell you, it absolutely happens in rugby.
Nonsense argument.
Hugh, Cawley's like an L. Wouldn't fancy being in the trenches with him. And by the way, the Dubs and Galway can't stand each other. Hi lads, yes, embarrassing yesterday in Boston. Look at the AIB club football yesterday. Too much handbag stuff. Let the ball do the work. Cheers, David and Wicklow. Yes, embarrassing. And at the end of it, nonsense, a Dublin player helped up the player he was fighting with, says Paddy. It was only a bit of pulling and dragging. It's an extremely tough and physical game, and these things happen. No harm done, in fairness, as Chris in Ballinrobe and Mayo. And an absolute embarrassment of the highest order. See, I don't see kids or teenagers getting stuck into each other. It's the adults on the sidelines roaring at the kids and teenagers and encouraging them to beat the lard out of each other. Obviously supporting you. Here are the results of the poll that we've had so far. Was the schmozzle in Boston embarrassing? Alan says yes. I say not a chance. 51% say yes, it was embarrassing. 49% say not a chance. You're a bunch of softies out there, I'm telling you.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
We have split the audience, it seems. Fenway Park was an absolute disgrace. It's about time GAAF started clamping down on these type of barroom brawls that you seem to be celebrating. Barroom brawls, lad. Have you ever been in a barroom brawl? And if you were, and that was the worst thing that happened to you, I tell you what, you'd be just grand and dandy and not a bother on you. Everybody's wrapped in cotton wool. What is wrong with people? Too soft.
I agree with the texter.
Hugh, surprise, surprise. Dunphy and his love child calling you agree again. Says mother. It was an embarrassment. Attack the ball, not the player. Go away, Alan, you lug, says mother. Agree totally with Alan and Eamon. No place for any schmozzle on the pitch. Just an excuse to fight and needs to be stamped out by referees to give a good image of our national game of brawls, as Derek Indrada. Keep
fair
them coming
play,
in.
Derek, fair play.
We have more. Joe Kernan, you're very welcome.
Good evening.
Good to talk to you. Listen, congratulations, obviously, on the back of Ireland's win against Australia on Saturday night. I wasn't at the game. Alan was, and Connor was here beside me. But looked, it was very exciting. A little bit too close for comfort in the end, perhaps, from your point of view.
Oh, it certainly was. But the boys gave so much in the first three quarters that the tiredness was starting to come in and a bit of fatigue. And we just lost our composure, and then we regained it in the last couple of minutes, which got us across the lane.
Difficult to watch, I'd say, though, from your point of view, you know, the last few minutes.
It certainly was. But at the same time, you know, that's part and parcel of it. You got to give credit to Australia. They knuckled down and come at us in droves. But there was some fantastic defending, some great blocking. In our full back lane, and we just did enough to get across, which was great to get the win.
Well, look, can I just say, you know, credit first of all to you guys and to Ireland and also to Australia, because the game overall, I thought, Joe, just was, from, you know, watching it myself and a few lads that I was with, very, very exciting from start to finish. And I just think it's given this series a real kind of shot in the arm that maybe it needed as well.
A lot of people thought that it wasn't like Gaelic football, and from the moment we got the job, we wanted to make it as much like Gaelic football as possible, especially with the kick pass and getting the ball up the field as quick as possible. And these are all skills that our players have, but unfortunately our game at home here has changed a bit over the last 8 or 9 years that become more defensive. But the two things that happened, the kick out past the 50 and the mark in the middle of the field, would allow our game to grow as well. That means that if you win the ball at midfield, that you can kick it straight into the forwards. So that means we won't have forwards running back for kickouts into their own half of the field. So to me, that would be a positive thing to try and help our own game.
It was pretty obvious early on. You know, Australia, as they always do, have a lot of big guys in the team, and their conditioning is just incredible to watch. Because of that size advantage, was the plan, Joe, to try and move them around as much as possible and kind of use maybe what it would have been a kind of... a cardiovascular advantage, if you like, you know, just a fitness level from Ireland to try to keep the lads on their toes as much as possible?
Well, you weren't going to outrun them for the simple reason that like, they're as fit and maybe fitter than some of the boys who play Gaelic football. But our squad, most of them had played up until the end of the year, so they were all in fair good shape. And, you know, but it was the movement of the ball, the movement of the players, playing, keeping it wide, playing it to the wings, and then the diagonal ball in towards your forwards, which means their defenders are running back was... So, you know, it was things like that we worked on over these last few weeks, and luckily enough, on the night, it come off for most of the match.
Do the lads enjoy the tackling side of the game, the Irish guys?
They do, but they just get doing it enough. You know, we think tackle with the hands first or tackle with as a shoulder. We automatically don't think of grab the man, which naturally Australia are far better at. But, you know, it's one of the parts of the game that we can work on it, and hopefully, like at the end of the game, Paul Carrigan, instead of putting the ball over the bar from 30 yards, which 3 points would have been as good as six, he went for the jugular and put it into Bernard Brogan, who the keeper just threw his arms around and tackled him, and it was a free out.
So what do you think about the possibility now of playing a two-match series? Now, I'm wondering, you know, when the full-time whistle went and you had time to digest it, is that something that you would like to see kind of from now on, back to kind of two games as opposed to just one?
I think certainly, you know, there's room for two games now. You know, everybody left there Saturday evening saying, I wish there was a game next weekend to see how would the fare out. It's only going to happen, what, two games every year. I think the supporters would have the appetite for it. So hopefully... They had a meeting last weekend, last Friday, and the reports back were that Australia were every bit much as up for it as Ireland are. So they talked about New York next year. If we go out to Australia, we play in New York first and then play in Australia. Or if Australia's coming here, we go to New York and then they come to Ireland. So, you know, you'd have no problem getting 20,000 or 30,000 people into a stadium in New York.
And what I suppose came across from my point of view was how much you personally seem to enjoy the whole experience the last few weeks and working with the lads.
Ach, well, if you're working with the best players in the country, it's hard not to enjoy it. From any manager, you know, from Dermot Early, Pádraig Chice, and Dara O'Shea, the three boys with me, you know, just to work with these players is fantastic. And the camaraderie that has grown before we went out, about 3 weeks ago, we went out together for a few beers, just to join the squad, and I think it was 40 with us. And as soon as we got on the bus, you could hear the noise, that, you know, the crack was good with them. So they certainly enjoyed it. And I must say, it was very emotional then when the national anthem was being played. Mm. You know, I spoke to Paul O'Connell a few weeks ago. And, you know, when you're wearing an Irish jersey, it means so much to you. And not everybody gets a chance of doing that. And no disrespect to Longford, but Mickey Quinn or Gary Brennan from Clare, you know, they mightn't win the All-Ireland, but they wore an Irish jersey and wore with pride and played exceptionally well. So, you know, from that point of view, it's great. So there's other players in other counties that we'll be certainly looking at next year again.
Conor Mortimer's here beside me. Conor, you're thinking about making a comeback for next season after seeing that on Saturday night?
No, I don't think so. I think that'll be okay. Well, just congrats, Joe. It's a good game of the weekend.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it. I was at it. You know, I think what worked probably the best was, I think, the fact that the Australian kind of full back line, as soon as any of them got the ball, they all ran, like, I suppose, forward, really. You were getting long kick passes over their heads and into, obviously, Burno and Connolly and them lads, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they played it a bit funny. They never marked the most dangerous players we had.
No.
But that meant they were putting more pressure on us out the field to stop the good ball coming in. But, you know, I'd like to play against fullback like that every week.
You're not the only one.
Their instinct as well, Joe, the Australians, seems to be, even when they had real goal chances in front of goal, that their instinct was always to take the mark rather than playing for that. And actually maybe coughed up a few chances where they could have stuck the ball in the back of the net, I thought.
Yeah, certainly, and that's where the difference comes in. Whereas they're good on the tackle, we're more clinical in the finish when we get in there. So I'm sure that's something that they'll look at, and our aspect of not giving it away near the end so much, using the space and spreading them out, you know, we'll have to look at that. But at the same time, it was end-to-end stuff, and the players couldn't give any more.
What about, I presume, listen, this is a two-part job. You can't walk away after this. You have to stay on and finish it off next year.
Oh, no. Just, my God, so as soon as the game was over, you were nearly thinking of next year. But it's just one of those things. Everybody will have a good break. We'll throw all the country next year, watching all every championship match the same as we've done this year. And you never know, there could be a few new faces in there. As I told the boys last Friday night when we had our meeting, you know, we might never be in this room together as a group, and that's why it's important to try and do something that, especially on the special occasion it was with the Bloody Sunday remembrance. So it was one of those great nights, and everybody can look back on that as playing that part.
Well, there's a lot of love coming in for you on the text, Joe, and the job you did, and to the lads as well. So, look, I mean, we hope to see you run out next year, and please God as well, the same results. Thanks, many, for talking to us.
Thanks very much.
Good Cheers. Night, Joe Kernan there. Yeah, I think, look, shot in the arm, and this is... There was a few lads sitting to the left of me there and said, oh, what are you putting on this for? Sure, it's not even... And actually, they were converted. By half-time, they were converted. By the full-time, they really wanted to see more of it.
I think as supporters, I suppose, will be looking for, you know, a bit of the stuff that Alan doesn't agree with.
Yeah,
in
bit
the
of
game,
shemazzling.
Because that's what is part of it, I suppose, really, in that regard, with tackles and stuff like that. You know, I thought Ireland played very well at the weekend. You know, as you were saying there with Joe, like the Australian finishing was never going to be what Ireland was going to be. You know, they had three or four goal chances and they didn't even shoot for goal, really. You know, they caught marks and went for the steady one. Like, you know, O'Shea, he got two goal chances and took the two of them. And that's goals win games, no matter what game you're playing. So fair play to them.
Just a couple of texts coming in as well. On the racing side of things, Kieran and Kilkenny says, I agree with Hugh. I was there on Saturday. Conte set it up for cue card and he could do what he liked. No real Gold Cup horse in that field. Conte has proved that. Holywell was fourth in the Gold Cup, but he's always a better horse in the spring. Can see him cruising in March and not staying up the hill or getting the trip. Gold Cup will be stronger this year too. Coney Gray, Vautour, Don Cossack, Jack Adam, Dom Poley, Road to Richards, etc. will walk over him come March. You could say after the weekend he has been the most impressive so far, but Cheltenham always shows the real stayers. I totally agree with that. But my old pal Frank Sutton, who did write in after I had a good go of cue card earlier on this year, says, hi Hugh, re-cue card. I don't think you're entitled to set the bar for him as high as you did with win the Gold Cup, or else there are 15 or so top class 3-mile chasers in Ireland UK at present and only one can win the Gold Cup in March. Why not just give him credit for all he has done on the course at the top level from March 2010 to November 2015? Too long to list here, Frank. I do accept your point, and I probably am.
That's very fair from Frank.
No, it is very fair.
That is very fair.
But he still won the Gold Cup. embarrassing.
Never let it go.
Embarrassing, definitely. This is on the GAA, Shemozzle in Fenway Park, but just part of the GAA culture. So why all the shock? Rugby is one of the most respected games because on the pitch they smash each other up and fight and then shake hands and go for a point. So I agree with you on this one. And from a touchy Galway man, oh my God, you are quite vexing this evening. Quite vexing this evening, should that be. There was a little bust up. What a surprise. 22 testosterone filled men throwing jibes at each other and niggling with the butts of their hurls. Friendly or no friendly, it happens all the time. Leave your shitty comments about Galway out of it too, please.
I love Galway.
Lads, I feel for the fans in the States who paid to watch the good fight and the match broke out. Island tip. With the same happen in a rugby exhibition match in the USA, it's all down to discipline and poor attitude. Alan is spot on. GA is amateurs ran by amateurs, so how can they have any class? That is absolute horse manure of the highest order. I never thought I'd say this, but Dunphy hit the nail on the head. Discipline in sport is what wins games. You play the rules to the point of breaking them and play hard but stay within them. The Galway and Dublin hurlers earned their amateur status with that display of discipline, says Niall Dundalk. Niall, here's my point.
See, Niall is right.
Here's my point.
They're amateurs, that's the bottom
right.
line.
Right, two lads get into a bit of a scuffle with two lads in the opposition team. It spills over and other lads get in and you join in to help your teammates out. That's what you do because you're teammates and you play for each other and you back each other up. That's part of life, that's part of sport and it happens. Nobody was hurt seriously. I would not condone any kind of violence to the point where people get injured. But these things break out from time to time. It's healthy, it's part of the game, it happens. Deal with it. That's what I'm saying.
I think you're wrong. I'm all for competitiveness in any sport, and that's what it's all about. But judging by that on Saturday night, they're over there, and despite what you say, it's an exhibition match, Hugh. It doesn't need to break out into... Now, what's surprising me a lot, because the amount of texts we got, the amount of people that's saying it was actually contrived and set up, I didn't think of that before, but maybe it was, which... If the GA need to do that to promote their game, that's even more laughable.
As an American watching the match, the fight made it look cheap, like hockey or WWE, not as classy as soccer or American football. Alan Cawley was a Shannon Gwales legend, a hard-hitting halfback. He's right, however, the Mullikers ran amok in Boston on a freebie.
That's definitely someone winding us up.
Who was the hard-hitting? You're the hard-hitting right back? My God. Growing up and now growing old prematurely in Meath, I found it disappointing that there wasn't a punch thrown. The Yanks will think we're wimps, says Jerry Enfield. Chair, I'd love to go for a pint with you, Jerry. Let's arrange that. Right, we're back with a real man's game, rugby after the break.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
And you're very welcome back. Now, one man who never shied away from an old punch-up, Donal Lennon, is on the line. Hey, Donal.
How's it going, you?
Not too bad. Listen,
you're very excited tonight.
We are. We're like kids in a candy shop here. Like owl women at a bus stop. Listen, before we get into it, 34 years exactly. I saw your beautiful mug in the Irish Times today. 34 years, and I quote the Times here, since Australia beat Donal Lennon's Ireland 16-12. I thought that was a bit harsh. I thought there was more people on the pitch than you. But just your reflections on that day, Donal. Brian Anderson didn't do you guys too many favours, according to the report today.
Sorry, well, I didn't even see that thing in the paper. Yeah, that was my first cap. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. 16-12 against Australia. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it shows how much rugby has changed because I remember a fella saying to me, "'Twas great to get your first cap against a team like Australia before the real tests against the likes of Wales and in the Five Nations." And funny enough, I had played against Australia the previous Tuesday for Munster and we beat them in Musgrave Park.
Yeah.
So, you know, and normally in those days, when you got your first cap, you were given the opportunity of not playing for 2 weeks beforehand. But... you know, you don't get the chance to play Australia. You might never get the chance again. So I ended up playing them twice in 5 days. But, I remember that game so well, as you do, your first cap. We should have won it. But you know what? It was probably the best thing because there was a couple of changes made and we went on. We won the Triple Crown and the Five Nations Championship 4 months later.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, speaking of rugby changing... you know, the results over the weekend, and I don't want to overstate this, Donal, and obviously, you know, you don't want to press the panic button, you know, but it does definitely feel with all the English clubs coming through their respective fixtures in Ireland, well, Ulster being beaten out the gate on Friday night and Leinster two defeats in two matches and it looks like their European adventure is over. It does feel like there is a shifting of the guard in terms of club rugby at the moment.
Well, there's no question about that, Hugh, but I think that's been sort of signalled for a long while now since you had the big fight in Europe, you know, when the if you like, the emphasis changed 24 teams reduced to 20, the meritocracy in the Pro 12, the money that's come into the game in France and England through either through benefactors or increased TV revenue for their domestic games. It's made a massive difference. But that said, you have a side like Leinster with 20 players involved in the World Cup, so you would certainly have expected a better performance than the one they gave against Wasps. That said, I mean, they made 8 changes. There was a definite reaction. But you know well, you can't play rugby when your set piece is obliterated to the extent that Leinster scrum in particular was. I mean, it just gives your backline no chance whatsoever. And when you look at it, you know, for all the stick that O'Connor got last year, this is a stronger Leinster squad. They have more leadership with the likes of Johnny Sexton and Nasiba back. You have Sean O'Brien, who I know he was injured on over the weekend, but he missed the vast majority of last year, as did Luke Fitzgerald. So, but look, there's definitely a hangover from the World Cup. I mean, I've spoken to a few players. You see, people think of the World Cup as an entity in itself, but they came together on the 28th of June. They were 3 or 4 months in camp, and Joe Schmidt's camps are fairly intense, and there's definitely a sort of a knock-on. A lot of the players, I thought, looked tired, and that's why, you know, I think Leo Cullen in particular, you know, he may look to give some of the younger fellas a chance, because definitely the fellas who came off the bench made a bit of a huge impact. He's 3 weeks in the Pro 12 now before they play Toulon, so you know, they have to effect some change.
Is it too simplistic to say that Leo Cullen is just out of his depth, and however much a nice guy and however good a player he was, that he's just not ready for a job like this at the moment?
Well, it is simplistic, but that said, there's no question he wasn't ready for this job. I made the point in the programme when he was appointed last year that when the Leinster Professional Board decided to terminate Matt O'Connor's contract a year early, not in their wildest dreams did they think they'd be appointing Leo Cullen.
Yeah.
So he has been thrown in. There's no question. Sure, he couldn't be ready for it. He's only a year out of the game. He was an assistant coach last year learning his trade, and he's thrown in at the deep end. And you look at the quality of opposition that he's up against. And to be fair, Wasps are obviously a better team than we all gave them credit for, given what they did to Toulon yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a steep learning curve for him. There's no question about that. And it doesn't help when, you know, with the exception of Kurt McQuilkin, all the lads around him, Gervin Dempsey, Johnny Fogarty, they're all also learning their trade at the exact same time. So
I'm wondering, Donal, you know, I'm wondering, guys, then, you know, take someone like Johnny Sexton, we know, who holds very high values when it comes to what he demands from the training ground and lessons that he learns. People like Rob Kearney, equally so, and plenty more besides Keane Healy. And they're looking at a guy that they used to play with, who, as you said, has never spent any time as a head coach. And they're wondering, you know, when things do start to struggle and when things do go badly wrong, what can Leo Cullen give us as a group that we don't know already?
Well, it's a difficult one, but I think those players you mentioned have to look at themselves first and foremost. I mean, Johnny Sexton, everybody knows he didn't want to leave Leinster 2 years ago. Went to Racine Metro. In fairness, he stood by his principles of getting what he thought he was worth in the RFU. In my view, made a mistake to let him go. And he's come back, I think, a lesser player. I mean, the experience in the 2 years in France has done nothing for his game. I mean, you look at him playing at the moment, he certainly doesn't look like a fellow who's enjoying himself. He looks pale, he looks under pressure all the time. And I compare him, I mean, you know, I saw New Zealand 4 times in the World Cup. You look at Dan Carter in the semi-final and the final of the World Cup, probably the 2 most pressurised games you're going to play in your life. And he was playing with a smile on his face all the time. No, you might add, playing at out half for New Zealand, you'd have a smile on your face as well. But you know what I'm saying, Johnny Sexton is 30 years of age. He's an experienced guy. He's back where he wants to be. He does have a huge amount of time for Leo Cullen himself, and I think it's unfair that Cullen is the one being singled out, because you know, he was never going to come in and spread a magic wand. I mean, to be fair to Cullen, I think he did a really good job in getting Leinster in the top 4 of the Pro 12 during that phase when 20 players were away during the World Cup. And it is, you know, drop-feeding in that amount of players in the short period that they've had, I think, has proved too difficult. and they're paying the price for it now. I mean, but the thing that I just can't get my head around is the fact that, you know, they've two international front rows, that they've been stuffed in the scrum. Bath, Henry Thomas isn't the starting Bath tight. David Wilson would have been playing ahead of him if he was fit.
Yeah.
Thomas isn't rated as a scrummager. Bath is a or Wasps aren't, you know, they were never a sort of a disruptive scrum. Yet, given the quality of players that Leinster have, they should be doing better. And but also, he took a calculated gamble in the game, and that he had no second row on the bench. He had two back row forwards because, you know, by and large, second rows don't tend to get injured. Of course, Hayden Triggs gets injured then,
yeah. And
he has to put Reece Ruddock into the second row. But if you look at New Zealand, they didn't have a second row on the bench in any stage in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. They had Victor Vito and Sam Kane.
Sam Kane, yeah.
And they would have put Kieran Reid or Jerome Kino into the second row. So, you know, that said, given the pressure that Leinster front row were under, the last thing they needed was a back row playing in the second row for the last 20 minutes. And you know, Ruddock was there when the penalty try was conceded. But to be fair, even before Triggs went off, that Leinster scrum was under severe pressure. And, you know, psychologically, when you see your scrum going backwards, that has an effect on the entire team. I mean, the most amazing thing about that game was that Leinster were level with Bath with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah. Okay, listen, unfortunately we're out of time. We got carried away with ourselves altogether, arguing like old handbags, Donal, but we'll revisit this because, as you say, life goes on and Leinster have a massive game against Ulster in the Pro 12 next week. But thanks for your time for the moment.
Not a bother.
Thanks a million. Donal Lenihan there. Okay, we'll leave the last word to James from Ballinahassig, County Cork, who says, great, once we please the Americans with stereotypical behaviour of stupid fighting Irish, it's fine. Leave Alan alone, you GA muck savages.
James.
James, yeah, boy, yeah.
Texted a knife from James.
Thanks, lads. Louise is on the way. Talk to you tomorrow.